Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans and Scotty Show brought to you by You First Credit Union. For over 65 years, they've been part of your community, and while the name is changing, their commitment is not. Find out more at youfirstcu.com. All right, joining us now is Hans is out, which, as we always say, it takes an army to replace Hans Olsen. So, Jeremiah Jensen, kind enough to hang out with us. Obviously, such a mainstay in the sports broadcasting community. JJ, how you doing?
Scotty, I'm good. I didn't have to spend the day in Fresno yesterday, so I'm better than you, right?
Well, coupling with how that game went, it was a it was a long day.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, you know, it's interesting how a season can get away from you because Utah State started out so well. They beat Oklahoma, which has turned out to be a really good team. Richmond's a really good team. So they had some really nice signature wins. You get a couple injuries, you get some things going against you, and a season can get away from you pretty quick.
Yeah, and the heartbreaking thing about this last stretch of three games is, you know, they played really well against Colorado State on the road, and Colorado State, you could argue, is a top 25 team. And
yep.
Then Wyoming's top 30 in net, and they lose a heartbreaker at home to them, and Fresno's a good team too. So you just ran a gauntlet where you had a chance to win two or three. I think they could have easily gone two out of three there, and it just didn't go their way. So you're right. That's just how the ball bounces sometimes, and, you know, the Aggies are on the wrong end of it right now.
Yeah, and it's tough to get it back and to learn how to make winning plays. It's just kind of interesting when you watch a team look good and then have some struggles and then get into a funk where it's just like, you know, got to get that confidence back. So I think they'll find a way to right the ship. But college hoops has been look, BYU is doing everything that we expected. I love their win against San Francisco, and they're going to be a tournament team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Craig Smith had some struggles in year number one. I don't think anybody expected that to be a quick fix up there on the hill. And then Utah State has had some struggles as well. So after such a great college football season, college hoops hasn't quite lived up to what we may have hoped it would be.
No, and I think, you know, there was probably some hope, especially early on. You mentioned that Oklahoma win for Utah State. That was a resume win. And you thought, well, if they do really well in the Mountain West, maybe they get back to the tournament, which would be great for them in this transition to do that. It looks like they're going to have to win the Mountain West tournament to get in. Utah, that's just, they've had, I mean, Brandon Carlson can't catch a break.
Yeah.
I mean, from COVID to an appendectomy, and he's their best player by a mile. And when they haven't had him, it's been pretty tough for them to win games. And it's just crazy that a Craig Smith team is in the bottom of the standings in the Pac-12. I just didn't expect that. But I have a lot of faith that he's going to get that thing turned around. It's just not going to happen this year. BYU's right where I thought they'd be. It's been a little bit of an up and down season for them as far as, you know, going with such a great start. That Oregon win had everybody thinking, you know, the expectations got even bigger, and then they had a rough patch, and now they're back to playing how they should. And I mean, nobody in that league is going to beat Gonzaga.
No.
Gonzaga's got a chance to win a national championship, but the Cougars are certainly, they got a great chance to make the tournament. I think they're close to being a lock. I think the Big Sky team out of the state is going to be Weber State or Southern Utah. So you're looking at probably two teams out of the state making the tournament, but we've been spoiled recently. So that's kind of where things are at. I mean, college hoops is you got to be really good in this state right now to get some attention as a college hoops program. I think BYU's there. I think you're drawing 18,000 fans every game at home. You know, they're in a great spot, but it's pretty tough with the Jazz and college and college football being king in the state to get any traction. And I think that's kind of been tough for the college basketball teams in the state right now.
Not going to lie, I saw that BYU will be opening up spring ball like on February 27th or 28th, and I'm like, you know what? Yes, let's get some back. Because, I mean, I think we're all on such a high. I mean, you've been covering sports here. We've never seen anything like what we saw last year in college football, and it was so much fun to cover these three teams.
Oh, it was a blast, Scotty. I mean, so the first time ever in the history of the state that we've had all three teams finish the season in the top 25. And Scotty, I don't think that this is just a one-year thing. I expect all three teams to be great next year. I think BYU is going to have no trouble, you know, replacing a few guys and being right there. Utah is going to keep on doing what they do. I think they're the favorite to win the Pac-12 next year. And why not the Aggies next year? They're bringing back a lot of talent. And I don't think this was a flash in the pan thing. I think Coach Anderson's got something going there that's going to last. And I look at the talent coming back, and they're really solid in that quarterback room. They got even more depth now at quarterback. I think they got skill position players. Obviously, you got to find a way to replace Devin Tompkins' production, and hopefully they got some guys that can step in and do that. Maybe they go find some dudes in the transfer portal. Maybe they already have. But there's no reason to think that the momentum and the fun that we had this year can't extend into next year. So, yeah, bring on spring football. I think everybody's excited about that. And when all three programs have the momentum that they have right now, the excitement's at an all-time high in the state, and it's fun to be a part of it.
All right, so we're just kind of going on a shotgun approach because there's so many different topics I want to hit on with you. But first off, let's go Jazz. And on a scale of one, meaning everything's going to be fine, this is a blip on the radar, this team's still in a place where they're going to make a run for a Western Conference title, and number 10, the sky is falling, hit the panic button, blow the whole thing up. Where are you right now with this team?
I'm at a 5.
All right.
Concern, Scotty, I am. And I'll explain my concern with the Jazz right now is we're at the point where we're past the 40-game mark, right? We're past the midway point in the season, even though we haven't hit All-Star break and trade deadline. And I think that's a good enough sample size to really understand where this team is and how good they are. And if we compare this team to last year, they've flipped. They've flipped in the standings. They've flipped in performance. I'm concerned about that. And I look at this group, and, I mean, they've had their COVID things they've had to go through, but they haven't had major injuries, Scotty. I mean, there hasn't been a period where they've been missing a guy for 10 or 15 games. So why the slip? And I'm trying to figure that out, and I don't really have an answer for that. All I know is the same problems that prevented them from advancing in the playoffs the last two seasons still exist, and it's poor perimeter defense. And I don't think that I think there's some guys on this roster that are going to have to try to figure out how to do that before the trade deadline, or the front office is really going to pull the trigger on something, I think. I'm sure they're trying really hard, and I'm not naive. I know that you don't just like say, oh, we want to trade. We're going to go get what we need. You need trade partners. You need the right guy out there to become available. But I guarantee you they're being very aggressive about that right now because they realize they've got to address that issue. And that's hard to talk about because I think Jazz fans really love this team is constructed, love the players. They had a great run last year and the year before that and the year before that. And, you know, it's hard to see some of these guys maybe have to move on. But I just – something's not right with this group. And I don't know, Scotty, do you feel like this team's as fun to watch this year as they have been the past two or three years? I don't.
I don't either. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's that teams have figured out how to attack Rudy. It felt like watching that Lakers game the other night, it felt like – the Clippers series from the year before where you're drawing Rudy out of the paint and you're driving and being able to facilitate so much damage there. And that to me is the biggest concern is I think there's a blueprint on how to attack the Jazz. Now you have to have the horses to be able to do it, but the upper echelon teams in the Western Conference have the horses to be able to do it. And that's what's concerning. And then plus, you know, look, if you're not hitting your threes, then it's going to be a rough night for you. And so I'm with you. I'm on, you know, in that 4 to 5 range with this team. And the interesting thing here, JJ, is when you look at a guy like Danny Ainge, who has shown in his time as a general manager in the league that he is not, you know, there's a lot of popular players there in Boston that he traded. He's pretty cold-blooded when it comes to if he feels like it's going to make the team better, he's willing to sacrifice a popular player or something that a fan may not be fired up about, but he's willing to do it. And I wouldn't expect it would be the exception this year with this team.
No, that's why I think there's going to be a lot of aggression, and it's going to require another team having somebody available, and you're going to start looking at maybe the bottom 10 teams in the league. Do they have a wing out there that can help the Jazz? And can they do it at the right price, right? I mean, like you just threw out names like Jeremy Grant and Harrison Barnes. That sounds great, but do the Jazz have the ability to make a move where the money matches up? I don't know. So it's hard to go out there and start throwing out names, but obviously they need somebody that can play that type of a role. That's what they're missing right now. And if you look around the league, Scotty, I mean, the Warriors are back, and so the Jazz didn't have to deal with the Warriors at full strength the last couple of years, but the Warriors are back. Memphis has leaped them in the standings. If the Jazz played Memphis in a series right now, I'm picking Memphis. If the Jazz played the Dallas Mavericks in a first-round series, I'm picking the Mavericks because I don't think the Jazz have any possible way to slow down Luka in the backcourt. And the Clippers are sleeping. They're a sleeping giant right now. Kawhi and Paul George aren't playing. They're sitting there at 6. But if they're full strength by the playoffs, you feel like you match up with them again? So if you're the Jazz and you're a fan, you're looking at this in the West. I mean, I just mentioned five teams that I can argue could beat them in the first round of the playoffs. That's not good, and that's frustrating. And so that tells you that something needs to change, something needs to be done, because between last year and this year, something has slipped, something has changed in regard to, and it maybe credit goes to the other teams in the league getting better, but the Jazz have not kept pace, and obviously something has to be done in order to kick things up a notch and get them back into that contender tier in the Western Conference.
Well, and I think that's what made last year so frustrating with that Clippers series is that we saw the window there, and yes, with Golden State being down and the Lakers were a mess and Memphis hadn't made that step yet, and you're like, okay, the scene is set for somebody to sneak in here and win a title while the big dogs are kind of on the back burner. And hey, props to Milwaukee for finding a way to going out and getting it done. But it was, the scene was set there for the Jazz, and they just couldn't take advantage of it.
It was wide open last year. You're right. It did. I don't think we appreciated just how small maybe that window was, and really took in exactly what the circumstances were and what was at stake last year in that playoff series. I mean, they were up 2-0 in that series, and you wonder, how could they have done against the Phoenix team? I don't know. You know, you have to add in the circumstances of the injuries to Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell, but looking back on that, Scotty, it just feels like a missed opportunity, and the combination of injuries and poor perimeter defense sunk their title hopes in a year where it was wide open. And you're right, props to Milwaukee. They were the team that figured out how to take advantage of that opportunity. But I'll always feel like that could have and should have been the Jazz that year that made that happen. They just didn't have the luck.
Jeremiah Jensen joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. He and Sam Farnsworth do such a great job on KSL-TV covering everything. All right, so when you're looking at trying to put this team together and trying to build this team and make that run, chemistry is so vital to this team. So when you heard the comments from Rudy Gobert the other day, did you just kind of say, okay, well, that's Rudy being Rudy, and he's going to say some things, he's pretty blunt? Or do you get a little concerned thinking, okay, you know what, that's not going to resonate very well in the locker room?
Okay, so here's my take on this. First of all, we got to remember Rudy's speaking to us in a second language.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of nuance in what somebody who's spoke English all their life will say to us. But when he's speaking in English, he has to speak in blunt terms because that's how because he's speaking a second language. So he is going to be blunt just by nature, right? So I think we often have to remember that when we're hearing Rudy speak to us in English. So I don't overreact too much to what he's saying, but I do like the fact that he is saying it. Scotty, this team needs leadership. And like we just spent the last 5 minutes talking about what's wrong with this team. Like those guys in the locker room, they know that things aren't right. They got to fix it. And if you're Rudy Gobert and you're Donovan Mitchell and you're trying to win a championship, you've got to do something to shake things up a little bit, rattle the cage a little bit, motivate some guys. And they talked before the season about accountability. If you remember back before the season started, multiple guys talked about, okay, we need to be accountable because everybody was asking about last year. How do we overcome that? Well, they got to hold each other accountable. And they felt like they had the chemistry to do that. That if somebody has to get on each other about something, that they'll take it the right way. And so I hope that's the case here. We'll see how this all plays out. But to answer your question, I like what Rudy did. I think he's got to speak up and say what he thinks. I also like what Donovan did the week before, saying this is not acceptable and we're not playing like a championship team. You can't blow a 22-point lead at Detroit. You can't do it if you want to win a championship. So I like that these guys are speaking up. I like that they're being bold, and I like that they're being blunt about what's going on here, because this team has some issues they need to address if they're going to become what they want to be and what we thought they would be. And I think the clock is ticking on a lot of these guys because the trade deadline's looming. And if this team isn't playing up to par, and I think the front office has an idea of where they need to be playing, then they're going to make some moves. I think they're going to try to do that aggressively.
So I've got a podcast idea. You, me, and Sam getting on a podcast and just complaining about the Broncos once a week.
Well, we could call it Broncos Anonymous.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I like it.
I think let's do it, Scotty.
I'm down. I'm down for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, if you could pick a head coach, who are you going with? Uh-oh, did we lose Jeremiah?
Sorry, yeah, am I back, Scotty?
Oh, yeah, there we go. Lloyd,
okay,
did you do that? Lloyd?
No.
Lloyd.
I didn't do that.
You did that.
All of a sudden, we start talking Broncos, and the Raiders producer fan, all of a sudden, my reception is gone.
So. I would never.
Okay. I answered your question. It was Eric Bieniemy.
Really?
I like Eric Bieniemy, and I think that, look, if you can't beat him, like, steal their offensive coordinator, right? Look what the Chiefs are doing, and they're an offensive juggernaut, and they're bored. Like, the Chiefs are so good, they're bored. I mean, don't they look like they're bored? Like,
a little
they're just
bit,
dominating
yeah.
everybody, and they're not even trying hard. I want Eric Bieniemy, who's got Colorado ties. He played at CU. I want him to bring some of that offense to the Broncos. Go out and get a quarterback that can execute that offense. Bring in somebody that can battle with Patrick Mahomes. Because if you can't beat the Chiefs in your division, then who can you beat, right? So I like Eric. Look, maybe Eric Bieniemy's not the bubbling personality, and like maybe he's not the Sean McVay that everybody in the league would want. But he knows what he's doing, and he's worked under Andy Reid for a long time. I want to dip into that because right now, what Andy Reid has done is first class and to the top of the league. So if you want to be the best in the NFL, you got to copy him.
Yeah,
because that's worked for many years, right? So that's where I'm at, Scotty. Who do you want?
I like the Hackett guy from Green Bay, but maybe that's me hoping that if they snag him, that Aaron Rodgers would be amenable to a trade to Denver. But I'm with you, though. I want young, and I want an offensive mind. I don't want some old codger, you know, defensive minded. Dan Quinn doesn't move the meter for me at all.
No.
I want young, innovative offense, and I think Bieniemy would be a great fit. I'm totally down for that.
Winning in the league right now. Who just won the Super Bowl?
Yeah,
Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like Byron Leftwich has done a tremendous job working with Brady to get that offense going. Look at the other teams in the league that are contending. What are they? I mean, maybe you could argue the Titans are more defensive minded, but I mean, I don't know. They got the best running back in the league, so offensively, and Tannehill's taken a step, right? So
yeah.
They've got some stuff figured out offensively. There's no great team in this league that's bad offensively. They're just, you can't win in this league anymore with bad offense, and the Broncos are trying to do that. And as bad as their offense was, they were in the playoff race with 3 weeks to go in the season. So
yep.
I think just adding that offensive, some dynamic offense to that roster and going out and getting a quarterback, I think all of a sudden the Broncos are a playoff team and you can go chase the Chiefs. That's what we're trying to do, right? So I think that's the next step.
Broncos Anonymous coming soon to a podcasting feed near you. I love the name. That's awesome.
Which is crazy, right? They won a Super Bowl 5 years ago, and here we are crying.
I know.
Crying about how hard it is. I mean, we're spoiled, but I mean, what do they say? You always have a 5-year window after a Super Bowl before you can complain. I think we're over. I think the window's over, Scotty. We can start whining and complaining about the Broncos because the current state of the Broncos is unacceptable. So the grace period after the Super Bowl is over.
Yeah, you could be like Lloyd. He's had a 40-year window in between Super Bowls. So.
Just had to get that last rub in, right?
JJ, you're the best, man. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Scotty. We'll do it again soon.
You got it. Jeremiah Jensen, KSL Sports. He and Sam do great work. Lloyd, that was not cool with you messing with
I did not do it. Apparently, he can't
line.
Afford a good phone.
Oh, no.
I'm just saying,
I bet he's got the company line. He's got a good phone.
Yeah, well, he must not have went with a good one. He must be working on the Hans Olsen phone because that thing does not work.
Oh, boy. I think that you're messing around with stuff.
I put it on everything.
Not okay,
I am a professional. I'm a professional. We got a show to do. I'm not going to look petty. Let
you
petty
get
differences
petty and
get
vindictive
it.
The time
not,
on this
not
show.
Not to mess with the show. I'm not going to mess with the show. Not the quality. I'm here for the quality of the show. That's what I'm not going to sabotage my good friend Jeremiah Jensen for that. No way. It's not worth it to me.
I don't know, man. As soon as we talk Broncos, it's going to be a problem.
Now this next guy that we're going to be bringing on, I might sabotage him.
Oh, now you leave Alema alone. Alema, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well.
Ski lift?
Alema, it's so good to hear your voice. How you been?
Man, it's good to hear your voice. I love listening to you and JJ breaking down the Jazz, and I'm excited to be heading in for another finally a home game. January is just wild, where we're just not at home very much. So you got to relish, you know, every moment that you get in front of the home fans, and of course, you love to be in an arena that is full instead of being in an empty arena to do our show. So I'm excited, man. I'm excited.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people excited because Tri-Day Trading has helped out so many people. I'm involved. You're involved. Hans has done it. Angie Davies is now doing it as well. I mean, there's so many people that are supplementing their income courtesy of Tri-Day Trading.
You know, I was just thinking about that because January is one of those months, right, where you kind of do your New Year's resolutions and you do some reflection and you think about what you can do better. And then, but you also, you look back on some of the things that you've done and you know, evaluate whether those things have been good for you or not. And I look back on since getting involved with Tri-Day Trading, what a blessing it has been to have that as something that was part of my my income that I could completely control. You know, outside of COVID or outside of anything else that's going on, I know that is within my control. And that's one of the things that I think we all love about Tri-Day Trading, not just the personalities that we get to work with, obviously, and the, you know, the one-on-one coaching and the proprietary software, and the list is long of the benefits, but, you know, the biggest benefit is what you see at the end of the day when you're making some extra money coming in. So I love that about it, and I always encourage people, if you have any questions, if you're on that, you know, in that month of January and you're looking and saying, man, there's some things, I need to do some things different. Well, if you've been thinking about giving Tri-Day Trading a try, then I encourage you to get on their website and get involved. And all you have to do is try, right? 30-day trial, just $10. It's easy to get started, and it's not a full commitment. You can come in and see what it's like and see if it works for you. And right now, with the cryptocurrency kind of blowing up and having opportunities to share with people at Tri-Day Trading, giving them a basic understanding and a knowledge of what cryptocurrency is and how to trade it, I think that just makes my Tri-Day Trading experience that much more valuable. So tridaytrading.com, if you've got an interest in it, you're looking to do something different in 2022, go to tridaytrading.com.
That's it. It all starts with a 30-day trial. It's a $10 to get you 30 days. You get some great experience. You get some great coaching. Go to tridaytrading.com. That's tridaytrading.com. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Joined right now by the Pac-12 Commissioner, George Kliavkov. I'm curious how much of what has gone wrong, what needs to be fixed, can be done by the Pac-12 Commissioner and the conference office, and what percentage is on the schools? What is the balance here? How much of this is on your plate?
It's probably 80-20. Probably 80% of the decisions that lead to football success happen on the campus and not at the conference. But the 20% is an important 20%, right? We have to be better about providing a better platform when we renegotiated our media rights, and that's related to revenue, it's related to distribution, it's related to competitive advantage, deciding who gets to play at what time of the day, for highlighting for AP voters and CFP voters on the East Coast. So we have a lot of work to do, but the larger input to football success comes on the campus for sure.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network, 237. Wanted to revisit the conversation from George Kliavkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12 Conference. DJ and BK able to sit and chat with him and essentially talked about, look, there's a lot of issues around the Pac-12. How much of it actually exists with the Pac-12 office, and how much of those issues, or at least the resolution of those issues, need to fall on the individual schools?
Yeah, listen, I think it's probably 80-20, probably 80% of the decisions that lead to football success happen on the campus and not at the conference. But the 20% is an important 20%, right? We have to be better about providing a better platform when we renegotiated our media rights. And that's related to revenue. It's related to distribution. It's related to competitive advantage, deciding who gets to play at what time of the day for, you know, for highlighting for AP voters and CFP voters on the East Coast. So we have a lot of work to do, but the larger input to football success comes on the campus for sure.
Commissioner, at least publicly, there seems to be a reluctance to want to come up with a format to expand the playoff. How much of that do you think is self-serving in terms of the conferences looking out for themselves and aren't really interested in going beyond what's best for them individually?
I think everybody's trying to balance what's right for themselves and their conference with what's right for college athletics and college football. And it's a difficult balancing act. And I think, you know, in the past, folks have had the opportunity to kind of work through these issues in private and, you know, make the kind of accommodations for each other that are required to get to a yes. And I think the mistake that we made in this process was we announced in June, you know, the month before I started, a proposal that came out of a subcommittee, which were four of the 11 members that have to say yes to change the format within the current term. And it was announced the same day that the other seven got to see it for the first time. And I think in the past, what has happened is all of these really difficult discussions that have been going through the last 7 months have happened privately, not in the press. And then once you come to a solution, you announce it and everybody is delighted. I think we misset the fans' expectations back in June, but this is a process that that has happened from what has been shared with me by the other commissioners every single time we've done this, right? There's a negotiation, you get to the right answer, it takes time. This time we just happen to be doing it in the press, which I think is a bad idea, and I hope we don't do it again.
Certainly an expanded playoff would bring in more money. Nobody doubts that, and that alone will probably ensure that it happens one day sooner, not later. But the whole competitive aspect of college football, I don't know that that changes, and I don't know that league's reputations change. Alabama and Georgia won semifinal games in blowouts, and most of the playoff semifinals since we went to a 14 tournament here have been blowouts. So putting in teams 5 through 12 seems to say, well, we're going to have some more lopsided games. How will that change the Pac-12's image? Will it be, you know, if you can't win those games and you're going out early or getting blown out by whoever is as good as Alabama or Georgia, it's going to be like the basketball tournament where there's some level of satisfaction in saying we were Sweet 16 or we are Elite Eight or we were Final Four. How's that going to work?
Well, I think basketball is actually a really good analogy for why it will work once you expand CFP. I think the issue with a 14 playoff is if you were good in one of the early years of the 14 playoff, it becomes a lot easier to recruit 5- and 4-star athletes and to get back there again. And I think you see that as kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because the teams that were good in the early years of the CFP got higher recruited players. They were able to get back. And now the vast majority of the CFP invitations have gone to 4 or 5 schools. And if we would have had a similar kind of structure in basketball, I think you would have never seen a team like Gonzaga be able to get into that mix, right? It was the fact that you had 64 and then 68 teams in the mix for basketball that allowed kids who wanted to go to Gonzaga to say, you know, I will get to play in my championship. I may not be the top 4, the top 8 team, you know, on the first or second line of the NCAA tournament when I get in, but at least I'm going to be playing in the tournament. And that allowed them to, over time, build a program, which is now a top 10 program. And I think that's what happens. I think when you have more access, kids are broader in how they think about where I can go to school and still participate for a national championship. And then it takes time, but that over time allows for a much more democratic spread of the talent across college football.
Hey, Commissioner, that leads me right into my next question. I have to say, I must applaud you first on being willing to address the realities rather than just basically blow smoke over them. And you've been great. And I was at the Pac-12 title game and you were downstairs giving the press conference and you spoke openly about keeping kids that are growing up into the Pac-12 communities local and rather than having to go out. I'm a Phoenix kid myself, went to Arizona State, and I can recite all the kids who've left. I mean, they just get nobody, basically. Keely Ringo, who makes the interception for Georgia to seal it, goes to Saguaro, which is right there in the Phoenix area, coached by a coach who has legendary ASU roots, the defensive coordinator. He and his brothers played at ASU, and nevertheless, the kid goes to Georgia. I can't blame them, but you spoke openly about how we have to fix that. Now, my thought for you is we all agree something has to be done, but what are the tangible things that can be done to prevent this from happening? Because so much of the talent, I just use Arizona because that's a local example. Bryce Young, who threw the pass, is from Pasadena. Obviously, California is a massive amount of talent. What can be done at the conference level and the individual level to prevent this from happening at such a widespread rate that it is?
Yeah, we have so much talent in our footprint. You know, the starting quarterbacks at the beginning of the season at Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State and Clemson. And Oklahoma were all from our footprint, right?
It
can't happen. So listen, there's two ways to, I think, turn the tide of recruiting. One is by taking shortcuts, and the other is by making investments. And our league is not about taking shortcuts. I mean, we just don't do that. So we have to focus on investments. And I think those investments come in many different forms, but let's look at two of them, right? Facilities and coaching hires. And I think you've seen in the past couple of years, and particularly in this past couple of months, significant investments in our football program. So obviously, yeah, you guys are very familiar with the beautiful remodel at Rice-Eccles and all the money that was put into that to make that the stadium it is today. You know, Oregon State pressed the button and exploded the west side of their stadium last week, and they're rebuilding that with $90 million in private funds. Oregon announced in October, I believe it was, a 170,000-square-foot football practice facility. It'll be the greatest practice facility in the country. You saw the investment in coaches, Washington State, Washington, Oregon, right, the defensive coordinator from Georgia, whose team gave up, I think it was, you know, something like 13 passing and rushing touchdowns in 15 games this year. And he's now going to be the head coach at Oregon. Obviously, Lincoln Riley at USC. I mean, there are big investments in football going on across our footprint, and that's what's going to get the kids to want to come. And you've already seen five-star kids that had previously committed elsewhere recommit to Pac-12 schools. You've seen kids that were considering other places now in the transfer portal coming back to us. And I think that's going to continue. And I think the investment by one school, I mean, USC and Lincoln Riley is a great example. I think the investment by USC and Lincoln Riley and his coaching staff will have benefits not just for USC, but for all of our schools. I think it, you know, kind of the tide that rises all boats.
Well, you can talk shortcuts and you can talk investments. When you say shortcuts, I immediately think of schools cheating and kids getting paid. And PK and I have been doing this for a long time, and we've heard specific stories about people getting 50, 75, 100 grand. And coaches off camera, off mic, just laying out who got what. One coach telling us a player who's now in the NBA getting 25 grand for home visits. Just to be, say you're one of the finalists, 25 grand. And they tell us in a way, they think, well, this is going on. Now, name, image, and likeness brings all this above board and into the sunlight. And I don't consider name, image, and likeness a shortcut. Maybe you do, and you could expand on that. But I think the conference is going to have to expand on that. Not only a lot of for star players, but stuff that's spread all across the roster for everybody so the players who are developing stay at these schools 2 or 3 years and develop. Man, that, yeah, there's 50 ways to go with that question. Go any way you'd like.
Yeah, well, listen, as a conference, we're in favor of name, image, and likeness, right? It never made sense to me that if you were a music scholarship student, you could have a YouTube channel and make money off of your name, image, and likeness. But if you did that as a college athlete, you'd lose your eligibility. That just doesn't make sense. There have to be some guardrails. And the guardrails that I think everybody agrees on is that name, image, and likeness, the amount you get paid has to be tied to actual work you do and the use of your name, image, and likeness. And it can't be used for inducement or pay for play, right? It can't be used as a payment to go to one school over another school or to play in the games. And we're seeing that happening. And it's so bad that you saw, you know, both Nick Saban and Kirby Smart before the national championship game in their press conferences particularly call out what a problem and an issue this is
for college football. And, the problem is that there's no national legislation. We have a patchwork of state laws that differ from state to state. The NCAA has not done any enforcement here. And they basically said, if you comply with your state law, you won't lose your eligibility if you're a student athlete. And by the way, if you're in a state that has no state law, you can do anything you want in name, image, and likeness and not lose your eligibility. So in some respects, it's better to be in a state that has no state law because, you know, you can do whatever you want. And until we have federal legislation or national enforcement of no inducement and no pay-for-play, it's the Wild West. And the stories that you've heard, I hear every day. I know it's happening. I've talked to the other A5 commissioners about how we can work together to try and solve that issue. But I think we're stuck with it until we get some federal legislation or national enforcement.
So there you go. By the way, John Hartwell, athletic director at Utah State, came on the show, a couple of weeks ago, and said the exact same thing, that I think that there are these athletic directors and these conference commissioners that are really begging some kind of national legislation to kind of help out with NLI. Because right now, individual states, it's kind of different, and the NCAA is not setting something up. And so right now it is the old Wild West. And when Nick Saban comes out and says, hey, you guys need to do this, or essentially Nick Saban kind of set a threat, essentially saying, look, if you guys don't, if we don't have some kind of legislation, you think we're running and hiding away from you right now, guess what? It's really going to get out of hand. And we're really going to separate from all of you with the amount of money and the boosters that are pouring into Alabama. If there's not some kind of legislation, if there's not some kind of way to kind of keep this on track, this thing's really going to get out of hand fast. All right, Hans and Scotty, we'll wrap this thing up. Get you ready for Unrivaled straight ahead right here on the Zone Sports Network.
This is Unrivaled.
Guys are doing a hell of a job.
Here's what is great about what George Kliavkov said. I love the brutal honesty. I mean, if you can't look at a situation and assess it and call it what it is and say what it is, you're never going to improve. If you're constantly putting a Band-Aid on it and say, no, we're in a good spot. We'll just, you know, just give us another year. Just give us, you know, it's a building year, you know, but man, next year things are going to be good. Next year never comes around. And when you can come out and make a very clear, very bold, very accurate, and very honest statement, that's really kind of the first step to, like, making change.
That is unbelievable.
Catch Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Want so much to give you this love in my heart that I'm feeling for you.
They don't say we're crazy. I don't care about that.
Hans and Scotty wrapping up another edition of the show right here on the Zone Sports Network. Hans will be back with us coming up tomorrow. Hey, finally, the way real estate should be, full service local agents, and you'll save thousands. Homie, a better way to buy or sell. I've been down here at TridayTrading.com, and Alema Harrington joining us one more time. Alema, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Scotty. I'm always jealous when you guys are down at Triday Trading and I'm not there, because it's one of my favorite places in Utah, and probably my favorite. Well, my mom lives in Lehigh, so my second favorite place in Lehigh. So, but I love just being around, and you know this because you're around it all the time, right? Love being around the positive energy, love being around the optimism and, you know, the hope for a better future. And for me, and I was introduced to this through you and through Hans and other guys at 1280, it's, you know, being able to take control of your financial future and do something different And especially during the lockdowns and, you know, everything that we went through COVID, I think we started to realize the importance, number one, of being able to do something that wasn't tied to, you know, something corporate. And then on the other hand, being able to do something from home, where so many of us were at home for such long periods of time and trying to figure out a way to take advantage of that. And Tri-Day Trading did that, both of the, you know, took care of both of those things for me. And then on top of that, what I just mentioned, which is the environment and the people that you get to work with at Tri-Day Trading are so awesome. And they're, you know, they are motivated for you to be successful because they're going to be giving you a corporate account that they'll fund. So they want you to be able to get good at this and be able to trade and make money. And the beautiful thing about that corporate account is even though they're funding the account, you can keep up to 80% of what you make while you're day trading using their money. So it's just a great program that I absolutely love. And I love the cryptocurrency element that is part of the program now. So I always encourage people, if you got a question or you have some interest or you're on the fence, now's the time. Go to their website at trydaytrading.com. 30-day trial is just $10. And you will be able to find out within those 30 days whether this thing is right for you or not. So trydaytrading.com, that's where it all starts, trydaytrading.com.
I appreciate it, Lemma. And again, that 30-day trial is you're going to get an education. They're going to coach you up. You're going to know, as you mentioned, if it's right for you. Mm-hmm. And if so, at the end of those 30 days, then proceed. But nobody's twisting your arm. No hard sales technique. If you like it, great. Let's proceed. If not, you're going to be able to make, let's just say this, you'll be able to make a very educated decision whether this is right or wrong for you at the end of those 30 days.
Absolutely.
Alema, you're the best, man. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Scotty.
That's Alema Harrington. Remember, you'll see him tonight. Jazz and Rockets coming up as the Jazz trying to get back on the winning track after losing 5 out of their last 6. Unrivaled coming up next. Hands and Scotty, this is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.